Now we wait at Radio Rewind.
Radio Rewind.
The following content has previously aired on CJSF. But don't worry, we'll be back next week with fresh content. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse. Independent. Yours.
Feminist women.
Mulheres feministas.
Zanone feminis.
Vanyu vachikonzero chevakadzi.
Nessa.
Mujeres feministas.
Yam femini. Un femactivis.
Nari mukti.
Matapang na babae.
Kechi mai. Ka ishk.
Ago in a galaxy far, far away.
What are little boys made of? Snips and snails and puppy dog tails. That's what little boys are made of. What are little girls made of? Sugar and spice and all things nice. That's what little girls are made of.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's
Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman.
Now the world is ready for you.
Your chains, crack your cage apart. I can tear your walls down with the beating of my heart.
Welcome to part two of Engendered Opinions, or excuse me, are you a girl or a boy?
My name is Scott. I live in Oakland, and I've got two daughters and a wife.
My name is Tasha. I'm 40 years old. I grew up in Berkeley, and I've got a husband and two daughters.
What's your name?
My name is Skyler. I live in Oakland with my mom and dad.
How old are you?
Four.
There definitely are conversations and questions surrounding, like, what boys do and what girls do, or what boys like and what girls like, which is always hard for me because I'm like, we can all like those things and we can all do those things. But she, you know, it's interesting with a four-year-old to start to hear
Nanny.
The way they're trying to understand the world.
So that gender sort of role stuff, we just let it be whatever it is. We don't want to, like, create an issue around it or sort of guide even in a way.
But she definitely, like, she's had questions surrounding, like, makeup or hair length or boys don't do that. Like, she'll see a photo and a boy's wearing a dress, as example, and she'll say, well, boys don't usually wear dresses. And I said, well, boys can wear dresses if they want to. So we have those kind of conversations. Like, it's open and people can do whatever they choose to. And some people might choose to do that. So more with Sky than with Thea. When they were, like, born, we tried to, for the most part, do, like, gender-neutral clothes and gender-neutral toys.
Hard to do.
It's, first of all, it's hard to do. And you get presents from people. And some people are more traditional thinking, and they get you the really pink frilly
the most pink frilly thing.
It's like, okay. And I feel like we were, I don't know if the word's careful, but we were more kind of open, made sure of the kind of gender neutral stuff with Skylar for like the first year or year and a half. But then you start to get all society's influences that you don't know. For us, we were like, we don't know where it's coming from, but it doesn't feel like it's necessarily coming from us, but like they're in the world with other people and they have media and everything else that surrounds them and starts influencing them. And then it's really hard to tell what is influenced by all that and what is just her, you know? I was actually surprised with like how she naturally, when she was much younger, like a year and a half, and had less of those influences, how she gravitated towards things that were more gender specific for a girl. She was interested in kicking balls, which is, you know, right, typically thought of as boy things, but they were like...
I don't think so anymore. I think soccer is definitely, like, way more popular as a women's
sport. Yeah, but she wasn't as interested in, like, trucks and vehicles and stuff, even though she had them.
Yeah, who is that?
We had those toys.
An interesting thing that, like, she definitely gravitated towards the princess more than, like, the digger. You know, or...
And there are other girls, like, it also had to do with her hair, too. There were more girls at her school at that time, and they were a little bit older than her. And for a really long time, she didn't want to wear dresses, because none of the other little girls at school were wearing dresses. I mean, it's complicated, right? So her daycare providers, usually at this age, a lot of the daycare providers are all female, and at their school, because they're at the same place. It's a husband and wife, and then they've got a daughter, a grown daughter. Who it's all three of them, and we love the fact that there's a male around. And there's a chance that Thea might be changing. Skylar's going off to kindergarten in the fall, but Thea might be changing. I was really happy that Thea's new school has males there as well, because I feel like it's so important, especially even when they're this little, to have like other males around that are caring for them. Who picks out your clothes in the morning?
Me.
Do you like to wear jeans?
No. What do you like to wear? What are you wearing right now?
Leggings.
Leggings? And what are you wearing on top?
A dress.
What if you had your choice, would you wear a t-shirt and leggings, or would you wear a dress and leggings?
T-shirt and both.
Both?
Yeah.
And when you come home, do you change into something?
Yeah, change into a dress.
Why do you change into a dress?
Because I want to be cozy.
Cozy. And, it's comfortable.
And I was no pants.
No pants.
Yeah. Pants come off first thing when she gets in the door.
Do you have a favorite color, Skylar?
Pink, purple, red, orange, green, and blue.
Whoa, all of those?
And hot cocoa color.
Hot cocoa. Yeah, that's a great color.
Yeah, because it's the yummy color.
Do you have a favorite superhero?
Superwoman?
Do you have a favorite movie?
Oh, Minions.
Minions. What do you like about Minions?
They like banana. They only eat bananas.
They're interested in knowing about the last time we went clothes shopping.
Come over here.
What did we do when we went out and had daddy-daughter day? We went and had a movie, but what did we get beforehand? We went to Old Navy, also Uniqlo. Yeah? What did you get?
Pants, tank top, and jacket.
Which jacket? You want to show them the jacket you got? What color is it?
Dark pink.
Sometimes we'll just pick the clothes, right? But we found, you know, we'll pick things and certain things get worn and other things don't. So, like, you know, I got Skylar this jacket, which I wish I could make my size. It's like green. This army green color with a big fur hat. And she will not wear it. I'm like, we've been trying to convince her for, like, 3 years because it was big to wear it. She's just not interested. Meanwhile, I'm like, I want to wear that jacket. When we do get the more gender-neutral stuff for Skylar, she's less interested. And she definitely can't stand wearing jeans. But I think that's a comfort factor. It's always this funny thing, like, I remember with both girls being out, and someone would say, oh, what a cute little boy, or he something or other, and it's always like, well, this moment where I'm like, I don't really care whether or not they think she's a boy or a girl, but maybe I should let them know, or, and then if you say anything, I wouldn't say, well, actually, she's a little girl, but I would say, oh, yeah, she, blah, 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 because I'm just having a conversation, and the she comes out, but there's always this kind of, oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry, and I'm like, what do, it doesn't matter, she's a baby, like, and you can't tell when they're a baby, and, like, what difference does it really make, but there is always, certain people, there's, like, an awkwardness if they've accidentally, like, indicated that you're little girls, a little boy, and it's like, well, you know,
I remember being called a little girl when I was a kid. But I had kind of like a, you know, 1970s, like, bowl cut type long hair. Thing. Yeah. Very, very blonde and straight. And not correcting them, but being kind of mad about it.
In the 80s, you know, I had the styly short 80s haircut. I want to say I was like around 10. And a couple times when I had the shorter hair, I remember going into a girl's bathroom and said, oh, no, the boys' bathroom's over there. And at that age, I was... like really upset, like, oh my gosh, you got a little boy. I still remember those, where I was and what I was doing and how I felt, you know, like I was upset both times. So
the ant climbs up a trunk carrying a petal on its back, and if you look closely, that petal is as big as a house, especially compared to the ant that carries it so olympically. You ask me, why couldn't I carry a petal twice as big as my body and my head? Ah, but you can, little girl. But not petals from a dahlia, rather boxes full of thoughts, and loads of magic hours, and a wagon of clear dreams, and a big castle with its fairies. All the petals that form the soul of a little girl who speaks and speaks. Riding on a hummingbird's wing.
I'm Rosario Villasana, and I'm the department chair of City College of San Francisco's Child Development and Family Studies department. I've been working in this field for over 30 years at the preschool level, as well as teaching adults and now organizing and coordinating the department.
We're hoping you could start us off by talking about what age children become aware of gender identity and gender roles.
It's a process that develops over the first 5 years primarily, and then of course it continues to get defined and sharpened as they get into the elementary school age. As young as a few months, children are able to tell what their gender is and what other people's genders are. As far as early as 6 months, the majority of children know what is expected of their particular gender. And as early as 18 months, children show a preference for things that have to do with their gender or not, depending on their bent. By about 3 or 4 months, they can distinguish the categories between male and female faces. Usually they can tell this by the frequency with which they look at faces and look at people and the people that come into them. So they can distinguish, you know, the characteristics in general of a male or a female face. And that's pretty young, you know, 3 or 4 months. Around 6 months, they can really tell the different kinds of associations with the different sexes. So like this kind of face might prefer this kind of face might prefer that. Of course, labeling comes much, much later, but they're looking at behaviors and they're looking at qualities and characteristics of behaviors. And so they can tell that a male face is more likely to behave this way or interact this way, and a female face is more likely to interact this way. So if it's the same-sex parenting, then they would associate it more with the person themselves, not a kind of a generalization of the gender. They're very much looking at mapping, you know, what am I supposed to be, what's expected, and so they look, and they can tell by the type of interactions that they have. So then they would just see that one particular face, even though it's the same gender, tends to have this kind of quality, and another particular face tends to have that kind of quality. And later on, then they'd label it as either more masculine or feminine, depending on the language in their environment. By around 10 months, they start to look at faces of men and women and types of things that they like to use, if they have a wide range of people. So they would say, for instance, a female face tends to prefer these kinds of things. A male face tends to prefer those kinds of things. So they're starting to become aware of the kinds of materials or activities by the materials that the different genders like to do or tend to do. But with regards to their own gender, that usually comes a little bit later, more like 2 or 3 years old. And because that's a social interaction with other beings or children of their own age. The leap is pretty far between them and adults. They don't really associate so much when they're young with I'm like this gender or that gender. It's that reflection about themselves tends to come later on when they see themselves in the mix with other children. We have classes here that have to do with diversity. We know that it's a great need, and we know that children need it as well as teachers, because teachers really need to be able to support children in what they are their naturally emerging sense of identity and capacities are. I think that one of the greatest tools that we have, of course, is working with the families. You know, really creating more of a bridge of understanding between home and school. So one of the biggest things that we can do for children is to honor their family decision, choice, and style, culture, basically. So we look at it in that sense, you know, really helping teachers to develop strategies for how to connect with families, asking families how they want to see things in the classroom. Some families want it to be acknowledged, some families don't, so we want to make sure that we are really respecting and honoring what the families choose to do. So I would say that that's the biggest one, is really in creating positive communication and respectful communication with families to find out what do you want, what are your expectations, what would you prefer not to have discussed or known. And so we really give the family a lot of stake in that and direction and letting the school know. And then once that has been established, then making sure that all the teachers and whoever is a member of that school community knows that children are to be respected for the identity that they've chosen to be and the kinds of activities that they choose to engage in. It does take a lot of work with teachers in terms of their own perspectives and views and values to make sure that we're able to be open with and supportive of the family's desires. And so there's always that kind of dance between the teachers and the school itself. The school may have a particular philosophy or viewpoint, but then all the staff need to come on board with that and be able to support the view of the school and the family. It usually does require quite a bit of work, though, especially if some teachers tend to have a different kind of background that might not be all that inclusive. But I think that site supervisors and directors are given a lot of materials and strategies for working with teachers to help everyone become more inclusive. And in general, I'd say that most of the teachers that we are working with really strive for that, you know, and making room for at the table for everybody, basically. Children are in a state of imitation. That's one of the most powerful tools that they have for learning. And so they imitate not only what the people around them do, but basically because they're so perceptive and sensitive to the adults around them, they can really perceive a lot of the values or intentions that people have because so much of the communication is nonverbal. Before 5 years old, they're in that concrete stage, so everything is concrete. You know, I want to see it, I want to feel it, I want to touch it. Teachers deal with that every year. Children want to know why they're different. You know, why are the body parts different? Why are the dress codes different? You know, why the hair? They want to know everything. You know, why is everything different? And teachers do need to be in authentic conversation with children about that at their level. You know, they don't need very abstract reasoning. They just want to know, confirm. Basically, what they're looking for is confirmation. Is what I'm perceiving correct or is it incorrect? And what does it mean for me? When they're very young, they tend to not really be so aware of, I'm going to play with a boy or I'm going to play with a girl today. They look for their best friends, you know, and their best friends have to do more with who does what I need them to do. Is this person likely to give me the truck or the doll when I want it? And they tend to, in the preschool age, be pretty fluid about that. It's when they get older that they tend to group off into genders, you know. So when they're around 8, 9, 10, maybe 7, that's the age at which they really polarize. And they go into, that's when they form the clubs, you know, no girls allowed, no boys allowed. And they're really grappling with it at a different level at that point. That's when they're much more focused on, you know, which gender am I going to play with? But before that, they tend to be much more fluid about that, and they tend to be much more just about how easy or difficult is it for me to get along with this person, you know, or what do I admire or like about this particular child? They're still forming their sense of I. They're still forming their ego until they're roughly around 3 years old. And so they don't really want to categorize. They don't tend to. It's not that they don't want to. It's that they're in their brain, they're not categorizing until they're about 4 years old. So that's when children become much more interested in, am I a boy or am I a girl? Am I this or that? You know, is this a fruit or is this a vegetable? And that tends to happen when they're developing categorization and their brain is thinking differently. But that's usually well after 3 years old. When adults are telling them you're a boy or you're a girl, that's categorizing them. What I meant to say is that children don't categorize themselves until later, you know. So the adults play a huge role in it because they're telling you that you're a boy and you should wear this, or you're a girl and you should wear that, or you should do this or that. And the adults tell the children that. I've had parents in our school say, you know, please don't let her play with the boys because the boys are rough, you know. Or dad say, please don't let him play in the playhouse because boys don't do cooking, you know, or something like that. So the children really listen to the adults and they notice what the adults are valuing and what the adults are supporting. And that's really huge. I think it's really important, especially as children get older, you know, to let them know that we want to foster whatever they have to bring. Because as an educator, our goal is to help them emerge and to bring forth those gifts and talents and capacities that only they were put on this earth to offer the world. And so as educators, I think it's really important to make sure that we don't railroad or limit them by pushing them into certain roles and certain identities. Because identity is about a sense of self and worth and place in the world. Not necessarily about gender. It's really more about capacities. And then the roles, of course, are what makes you succeed or be acceptable in society. They're very different kinds of functions. And when we can really listen and observe and watch the children and see what it is that they are bringing to the table, so to speak, then we support them in those things that they're very challenging to put into words and that they often feel hesitant because they're so intimate to them. When we allow them to be who they truly are, it's a gift to them. And I would really encourage parents and teachers to take each child and look at them, even if you have a large body of knowledge, to just kind of set that aside for just a minute and look at who is this child that's in front of you here now, right now, and what can I do to make sure that they understand that I am here to help them in whatever they need, and I'm here to support them to be the best they can be at any moment. We had a little boy a while ago, and he just loved everything that was red, you know. We had in the dress-up area a little boa, feather boa, and he just loved that, and everybody just celebrated that for him, you know. And the children are very accepting. When they see that so-and-so needs to have all the red clothes, they're fine with that because they know that that child needs it. They're very accepting until somebody tells them that it's not okay. And unfortunately, usually that's someone in the family.
Five Unexpected Gender Differences in Children's Clothing by Catherine D.M. Clover. Difference number 3. The unexpected symbolism of gendered clothing. Princesses are for girls and superheroes are for boys. You knew that already. A few months back, we received a bunch of handed down clothing at the same time. The kid and I put all the new and old clothes into a heap and sorted through them. He reached into the giant pile of fabric and pulled out a pair of gray tights covered in multicolor hearts. He was instantly in love with them. In fact, he wanted to wear them every day. We know that our culture expects women and femmes to do the vast majority of emotional labor. What I realized on that day is that this clothing intended for little girls is often covered with symbolism promoting that very labor. Clothing for little boys, not so much. A heart is an organ we all have, and all children have emotions and need to learn to deal with them. Yet a heart is a gendered symbol. You will be hard-pressed to find a boy's shirt with a heart on it. Little boys are being told from a very young age that feelings don't matter, at least shouldn't matter to them.
I'm Laura Lee Hind, and I am an after-school art and recreation teacher at West Portal Grammar School in San Francisco. This year, my main class is third graders, but I teach between kindergarten and fifth. The kids, by the time they're 5 years old, are like sponges. They're the ones who want to tell me, usually, what's the difference between boys and girls. They're really adamant about that. In general, recently I was watching a movie. It was Cat in the Hat with the kids. It was way after school. And the guy who's Cat in the Hat dressed up like Carmen Miranda. And this little girl goes, he cannot do that because he is not a girl. And she was 5. So, you know, no, I didn't tell her that, right? But that's not allowed. Many of them are like that because they want to get the lay of the land or the lay of society, right? And their brains are not fully formed, so that's how it goes. And then later on, I'm sure they start differentiating these things. But also when they're really young, they're under the adult's thumb. I mean, they're watched all the time. So it's not like they could have original thought, which, of course, I tried to inspire original thought with my art classes, which is difficult. Really, you'd think it wouldn't be, but it is. Last year when I had my fifth grade class, I had a boy and a girl who were buddies. But in this case, the girl was telling me that she liked girls, and so she was different than the rest of the group, right? This year, my third graders, I have like boys that are kind of militant, and they all want to do sports, and the girls are very contemplative, and the boys like to roughhouse a lot, and the girls are like, I want no part of this, this is ridiculous. But that's the stage that they are. And I have a class which is predominantly boys. I think I have 5 girls and I think 15 boys. And that particular little group is the one that wants to roughhouse and stuff. I mean, it depends on what group you get going. But they pair these kids according to their friends. So that's how it goes. Because their parents have to pay an additional amount for them to go to this thing. There's a fifth grader that's doing the shaved side of her head, who's a girl, and they all think that's quite astonishing. There's some boys that wear their hair long, but generally speaking, after a while, they get it cut off. I have been told by some of the girls that I always have my hair short and they think it's weird. And my makeup, too. It's like, why are you wearing makeup? Oh, I like your makeup. It's like, why are you saying stuff to me about my makeup? I just like it when people say stuff like this when they're adults, but you're a kid, so I'll let it ride. So now I'm telling you that my boys that I have in my third grade class, they want to roughhouse a lot. When I give them an art project, they want to work out, like one young man, he really likes cartoon comic book clubs, so he can make his own comic books, but they're all about let's go to war. And he's the general, and he's making them all, and that's what all these little boys are doing, which is, I don't know where they're getting it. It's not for me, okay? Because I'm going, be creative, do what you want, and that's what they want to do. And the girls in the class, they're absolutely not interested in that. They're more interested in whatever I have to offer. Like, let's learn how to do perspective drawing. And they're more interested in me helping them and instructing them. And they will do more of what I would like to have happen. I don't know if it's gender, but it has to do with whatever it is that's inculcating in their life. Whether they go home and play video games. It's a lot of hostility going on in my little group. With the boys, wouldn't you say? I would say. They have to work it out. The girls aren't hostile. My girls and boys can't even play on the playground together. Boys like to go dominate the foursquare. We play foursquare outside. We play baseball. We play kickball. You know, it's art and recreation. And the boys will go, okay, I want to play kickball. And the girls go, okay, we're going to play foursquare. And then as soon as the boys decide that they're tired of kickball, they come over and they see if they can just knock all the girls out of foursquare and then dominate the game. That's their thing. So I said, no, you guys cannot play. Because then the girls are going, ah! I'm like, okay, no, you boys cannot play with those girls. So that's that. Yeah, I asked somebody else's help and they said, well, they just can't play together. Do that. Okay, that's what I'm doing then. Well, I realize when the kids get older that there's like gender fluid and all kinds of interesting stuff going on. Mm-hmm. But I don't see it at this stage. I don't think that the adults in the school impose any kind of thing on them, but I think it's peer pressure and their parents. So they're always trying to manipulate for power. There's one girl that does that, but she does it in a different way. She likes to pout and things are not her way, right? Or she'll cry. But the boys are trying to say, la 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 la, I did this and I did that. Or they will flat out lie to you because they want to get some power. That's what I have going on anyway. You become more forgiving as you see. Well, this is the human animal, right? There's no little ideal, little cherub children. No. Like, I took them all up to Mount Davidson, and a hawk came down, and all the little boys got rocks, started throwing at the hawk. And I, like, was ready to have a brain explosion, right? Like, you don't do that! And why they would think that that'd be a good idea? Come on! Yeah, so we're trying to introduce them to natural things. We had a falconer come, and so they got to see 2 hawks, a barn owl, and I think it's called an eagle owl. And they brought it to the auditorium, and the kids were really interested in it, but they were most interested when the animal pooped. So they're not really around. They don't have empathy. And I'm also teaching a class with 4th and 5th graders right now, and it's pet science, and most of the kids have never had a pet. Now, myself, you know, I had pets from the age of 5 on, and always have had. And so I know that I have a natural empathy for other living creatures, but these kids don't have it yet because they're not around it. And a lot of the parents here, that's when I talk to them about their hostility, they go, oh, well, that's natural for boys to have that kind of behavior. I'm going, really? Oh, good. If it's natural or not, we can't prove that, but right now I get where the line of power is drawn here as far as me having any kind of leverage.
My name is Anastasia Smirnova, and I'm an assistant professor of linguistics at San Francisco State University in the English department, and I'm a director of experimental and computational linguistics lab. So I'm interested in formal properties of language and language as a part of a cognitive system